On the fringes, I I'm proud to say that I share. This was the court's finest hour.
Oh. Well, we finally produced an opinion. And I prayed, and I mean that literally, that we could find a way for the court to be unanimous, to show the people of the state of Michigan, in the bench and the bar, that although we came from partisan sources to the court, that this was just too important to be partisan about, and we wanted to lay to rest this terrible reputation the Supreme Court had for jumping Republican or Democrat in the 60s and 70s. And thanks be to God, we got a unanimous tentative vote at the conference table, 7-0 for what we call the APOL plan. And the chips would fall where they fell, and it would probably result in a small Republican benefit. But at the 11th hour, one of the members felt he could not sign the opinion, and that was Blair Moody. And we didn't lobby one another in the court, really, to change position on opinions. You'd try to persuade another person to your point of view about the law, but there wasn't any intensive lobbying. I don't know if there is in any Supreme Court, but we reconvened and we attempted to persuade Blair that the differences he had, which were based on a good faith view about what the Constitution required, but not a view that the other six of us shared, that the greater good would be the unanimity of the court rather than his expressing himself. And now I'll say something I hope I won't regret. I loved and respected Blair Moody, still do. He was a colleague in the Wayne Circuit Court. He was a man of unimpeachable personal integrity. He worried terribly about doing what was right. A man of high morality. But 1982 was his election year. And the apportionment plan was going to go because it had 6 votes minimum. He was about to face a tough, tough re-election. They're all tough in the Supreme Court. Forgot who his opponent was to be. Oh, it was Dorothy Riley, maybe.
Dorothy Riley, Mike Kavanaugh, and Moody were all running, and there was somebody else.
And I have felt to this day, and it is not a criticism of my brother, it says more about me than it does about him, I suppose, that while he felt deeply and honestly that this apportionment plan was mathematically not up to the federal constitutional snuff, that that was a point on which he could have said, well, I don't have to say so in an opinion. I can sign the majority. I think had he not had the burden of facing the electorate that fall, he might have made it 7-0.
I think, was it not 7-0 in some form, the and that he split off on issue of an order or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it was. It was essentially a unanimous decision.
Yeah,
the part that matters was unanimous.
Yeah,
and I don't denigrate his memory at all. Didn't jump ship for partisan political reasons. He was aboard on the principle. But he took criticism which was unwarranted in the election because his partial dissent on the technical issue of the process by which it would be implemented, I think it was, attracted a lot of partisan fire as being a purely political call. It wasn't a purely political call because he felt honestly and strongly that we were mistaken on that point. My only point was, it would have been nice if it had been a time and a circumstance in which, as he did on other occasions, we all did on some occasions, said, well, I don't agree totally with what is written here, but I can sign without compromising my principles. In all events, he did what he thought was right, and because he thought it was right. The result was, however, that he didn't diminish in any way what you said is the court's finest hour. We were able to produce a plan that I think has never been assailed as having any partisan political taint to it.
Are you aware that while that was going on, that there were calls, a few of them anyway, came over from members of a legislature, I think in particular of Joe Conroy, the senator out of Flint. And I took some calls from him. I had known him. And I was in the Chief Justice's office. And he wanted to remind me that the appropriation of the Supreme Court came from the legislature. You got seven people on that court now, but you know, we could it could be just five if these people don't seem to know how to handle their responsibility and that kind of stuff. And it was, I think, it was a terrible reflection on this man and some of the others. There were, I would say, probably three I could, whose names, if I went back and worked at it, I could dredge up. But I'm sure that you must have felt some of that kind of pressure.
We knew there was some heat, but I must say that the vast majority of the members of the legislature and the political party, I think, recognized the court had to do what it thought was right and wouldn't get into that. There was some of that. But to the extent that we were aware that there was some of that going on both sides of the aisles, all that did was solidify our determination to try to turn out a product which was devoid of any political influence in its making, and that's what happened. But it proves, I think it proves, what an absurd situation it is to ask the judiciary to perform a purely political act, which is to apportion the legislature.